Found it? Okay. So Pirek got Perek Bet. We're still on the second Perek. And either Mishnah Hey, if you got it, or Mishnah Vav. And it says, Hu Haya Omer, he used to say, who is he? Who's he?
Hillel.
Who?
Hillel.
Hillel, that's right. We're still in the world of Hillel right now. Hu Haya Omer, he used to say, by the way, what does it mean he used to say? You say a lot of things. That was his mantra. Oh, very nice. His mantra, okay. I guess you could call it that. That's kind of, I think, the thing he used to live by. Shabbos? Or... this was kind of like the thing he used to really, like, live with. And used to be, like, constantly in his mouth and his thoughts. And we would talk to students, he would, like, live by this idea. Look away. Okay, so what did he have to say for himself? Ein bor yirei chet. A bor, bet vav resh. What's a bor? Good morning, Jessica. Good morning, Jessica. What? A bor? No. Oh, it can be a bor, actually. That's right. Actually, oh, yes. A bor is just a rabbin. That's true. When it comes to a person, what is it? Actually, it's probably connected. It's a, yes, actually. A bor is correct, yes. Yeah, it works both ways. Watch the cup. Yes, it works both ways. A boar. What's a boar in English? Melissa, what's a boar?
B-O-R?
B-O-O-R. No, that's a boar, is someone who is boring. No, that's what we're talking about. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah.
Oh, no. It's not a B-O-R-E, no. A B-O-O-R, never heard that word before? A B-O-O-R, you know what? You're very lucky. Not I'm a rabbi teaching you Torah. I always teach you English as well. Isn't that helpful? A bore, B-O-O-R, what that is? A boorish person?
Someone who's like, I don't know.
What was that? What was that hand movement?
Like,
he's like, whoa.
Animal, a
No, that's a B-O-A-R, is the animal bore. All right, you have a B-O, who probably isn't too much of a bore, but he's probably pretty boorish. B-O-O-R is a... let's have a look how the Torah defines it. It's related. A boor is a person who is pretty uneducated in everything. That's what Rashi says. What is a boor? Says Rashi. Reik mikol davar. He's empty of everything. He's just empty. Afilu b'tiv stebor. He's like totally... Afilu b'tiv... Masa or Matan Yodeh, he doesn't know how to do business. Just like a real zhlub. Is that the expression they use nowadays? Just a real nothing to him. He's just uneducated. Doesn't even like do work. Just like such a person is looked down upon by Hillel. And he says such a person is not going to be fearful of doing sin. Such a person is not going to be fearful of doing sin. But I'll sort of look at this word for one second. Chet. That's an interesting word. We use it a lot. Chataim, we say, right? What is a chet? What is chet? Chet is... so we translate it as sin. But there's different words for sin. There's a very nice Ramban where he talks about the chatas, which was the sacrifice that was brought for someone who had done a chet, some forms of chet, actually. And he said the word chet, actually, refers... he finds it elsewhere in Tanakh, refers to a person who is an archer. An archer, a person who does archery, bow and arrow. He says such a person, when he is shooting, he wants to get the middle of the target, which is called the bullseye. And he shoots, and he misses. It's actually the word chet, chata, is that he missed the bullseye. Right? Like this. So chet, he says, is he shooting the arrow and it went over there, as opposed to over there. You're missing the mark. It's a nice way. Sin doesn't really mean like too much, but we have to be bullseye people, and we get involved in chet. We get involved in missing the mark, our true potential. So a boor, says Rashi on this Mishnah, is someone who is so uneducated in everything, he's got no idea what's going on, he's just like, you know, a real earthy person. Such people are not afraid of sin. Right? Staying away from sin is not really part of their... V'loi am ha'aretz chassid. And an am ha'aretz cannot be a chassid. What's an am ha'aretz? Am ha'aretz. Right, it means, an am, a nation of the land. What does that refer to, though? It's expression. So an am ha'aretz is an individual who is not learned in Torah. They could be learned in many things. They could be learned in business, in architecture, and they could be very, very smart people. However, they are not learned in Torah. It says the Barat Nura, the lo am ha'aretz chassid. Val yurei chaydef shashiyeh. Such a person is possible through their knowledge of various things will be fearful of sin. Why? Sharei hu baki betiv maso matan. Such a person is at least as a person of the world, but an am ha'aretz is a person who's not learned in anything Jewish whatsoever. He doesn't know. So maybe through his own calculations, by looking at other people, such a person will be fearful of doing the wrong thing. All right? What's a chassid? What's a chassid? I mean, do you think over here the Mishnah is referring to chassidim with their black coats and the strimals, the furry hats and the... What?
Yeah.
Right. So a chassid really refers to a person who is extremely righteous. And it can't be referred to the chassidim, right? Because they didn't exist when the Mishnah was written. They were off by a couple of thousand years. But a chassid is referred to a number of times. People are very meticulous with mitzvot. People are very meticulous when they do mitzvot and have tremendous yirah shamayim. So am ha'aretz can be fearful of sin, but they can't reach the level of a chassid, of a person who's very, very careful. V'lo ha'bayshan lamed. This is a very important thing which I always like to mention in classes, which I should mention already. What's a bayshan?
Embarrassment?
Shy. That's right. Busha. Shy. Is that a good trait or a bad trait? It's a very good trait. Yes, Jessica. It's a very, very good trait. Person's busha. Right? Says the Rabbeinu Yonami that Boshu Tova B'chol Inyan. It's a wonderful thing, right? To Busha, to be mitbayesh, to like act in a modest fashion. It's seen as a good person. You know, it's a little bit of Busha. It's not seen as a bad thing. It's in the way we talk, that we act, that we dress, a little bit of Busha. Right? We don't just go do everything, say everything we want, wherever we want to say it. A matter of Busha. However, there's one place where it's not a good thing. And where is that, and why is that? When it comes to learning. A vlo baishan lamed, a person who uses this trait when it comes to learning, they're not going to learn. That's not good. That's what he says. Mida boshe itovu bakol inyan levad belimud, when it comes to learning, that's not a good thing. When it comes to learning, you have to ask, you have to know, you've got to ask questions. That's the Barat Nura. Shehamit bayesh lishol, a person who's too embarrassed, too shy to ask questions. Shema yaligu alav, he's scared that people are going to make fun of him for my silly question. I hear that all the time. Who say to me, I've got a question, it's a really, really silly question. It's such a stupid question. And what do I always say? There's no such thing as a stupid question. There are, however, things as stupid answers. That there are. But there are no stupid questions. So a person who's scared to ask questions, always say, by the way, whenever someone says, usually that question is actually a brilliant question. That's what I found. Whenever someone's too embarrassed to ask a question, and they ask, I'm like, I really don't ask it. Okay, I'll ask it. Such a person, you share a tamid b'svekatav, That person's remained the rest of their life in doubt because they never asked the question. Now you could turn around and say, well, maybe someone else asked the question. Now hear me well, fellow students. It is not enough to hear someone else ask the question. And this is a habit I get into myself to this very day. I always, when I'm hearing a shiur and I'm able to, ask a question. I make it a habit. Actually, I can't even help myself anymore. If I go to shiur, which I go to, right? I go to shiurim as well. I also learn Torah. And I go to shiurim of great rabbis, and I'm sitting closer, and that I'll always ask a question. I just do it by habit. Just the process of asking a question is a good thing. Sometimes I know the answer. Sometimes I think I know the answer. Many times I don't know the answer. It's not about the answer. It's not about the answer. It's about the question. Just the process. And by the way, they always say, I think they said somewhere, that one person asks a question, really 10 people have the same question in a class. You've heard that before? If one person asks, it means 10 people. So always, I won't just answer them. I'll address the entire class when I answer the question. But it's all about the question. Which Jewish holiday do we see is focused on questions? Pesach is correct. Why do we focus on questions? How many questions are asked on Pesach? Four questions. This is not coincidental. The Pesach Seder is always directed towards whom? The children. How do we know that? Because it says in the Pasuk, V'higadata levincha. You have to tell your children. The real mitzvah is to tell. If there's no children there, you get the youngest person who's available to ask the question. But someone's going to ask the questions. V'higadata levincha. Tell your children through question-answer form. That was the way Chazal decided. It was the best way to educate children. They have to learn to ask questions. You have to stimulate them to want to ask questions. Merely rattling off information at your Pesach Seder. And by the way, why are we so interested in kids, by the way? Is there a mitzvah to keep your kids up on Sukkot? No, because you want to go to bed? No problem. Is it a mitzvah to keep your kids up on Yom Kippur? No, stay up, let's talk about the fast. Nope. Stay up on Sukkot. Pesach, yes. Pesach, we keep the kids up. And all the things we do in the Pesach Seder actually are there to keep the kids up. And all the unusual things we do and the questions of pulling tables away and adding food and doing strange things, it's all to make the kids ask why. Because question-answer is the real way to learn anything. What we're doing right now, lecture format, is not the best way to learn Torah. The best way to learn Torah is one-on-one learning, bechavrusa, bechavruta, and asking each other questions. The entire Talmud is based on questions. It's not an encyclopedia of information you download into your head. It ain't Wikipedia. It's Q&A. And the most important thing is on Pesach, when we become the Jewish people, and we're discussing the Jewish people, we want to get kids interested. How? We make them ask questions. But let's say they're really, really ignorant. Let's say they know absolutely nothing. What do we do? We tell them the question. Let's say Eini Yodea Lishol, one of the four sons, doesn't know how to ask questions. We'll tell them there's a question anyway and give them the answer. And by the way, of all the four, we have the Chacham, we have the Rasha, we have the Tam, the simple one, and we have the Eini Yodea Lishol. So many commentators say that is not just four random boys. Those are four types of children. And some people, or people even, and some people are very, very smart. They know it all, Chacham. By the way, what does a smart person do? He asks a question, right? The Chacham, he actually asks a question. I mentioned this before. Chachma, we said. When we said Chachma, we said that, right? Chacham is Koachma, the power of asking questions. So the Chacham is the smartest one, and he asks a question. And then the Rasha, he also asks a question. His question, however, is cynical. What are you doing over here? But he's asking a question. But it's cynical. It's not a good question. But he's asking a question. Instead of Rasha, because it's nasty and he's doing it not to learn, he's trying to make a point, but he's asking a question. The Tam also asks a question. What does he ask? Mazor. He doesn't know. What is this matzah thing? What is this stuff? I got no idea what it is. He's completely oblivious. You can see it. He doesn't know what it is. However, what comes after the tam? Enyo de lishol, which actually is the worst. You think the Rasha is the worst, right? You look at when you're kids, you look at the Haggadah, right? And there's pictures of the Rasha. You used to have these, when I was a kid, you used to have these really ornate Haggadot with all the crazy pictures of the Rasha as a terrible person. Actually, the Rasha is not the worst one. He's asking cynically, but actually he pretty wants to know. He wants to get into an argument about it, but he's open to discussion. You want to hear Jonathan Sachs speak?
Yeah, he spoke, and he said the opposite. He said that the Russia isn't interested in the answer. They just ask because, like, to provoke.
Yes, they're provoking. Absolutely. That's why he's a Russian. He's provoking. He's cynical. He's not skeptical, which is good. He's cynical. But I'm saying deep down, he's still there. He's still making a comment. It's those people, oh, why do you Jews have to do this? Why do you have to... Right? It's like very cynical, but I'm telling you, if you get below the surface, deep down, they're actually interested. They're fighting it. And they're nasty, and they're not doing it the right way. However, worse than that is the one who doesn't even know there's a question to ask. They may be very nice, very respectful, but they're so far away, they're so distant, but they're still at the Pesach table. Where's the fifth son? Where's the fifth son? Arba Banim, Dibura Torah. Torah mentions four sons. Where's the fifth one? The fifth one isn't even there. He doesn't even know there's a question that he should be even asking.
Isn't
that in the dead son? He's gone. The fifth son is so gone. He's so distant. Think of it this way. You have a great-grandfather, grandfather, father, and son. The great-grandfather's the Chacham. Okay? The grandfather... His father's Chacham, but he rebels against his father. He has a son. His son becomes a Tam. He grows up with nothing because his father rebelled, so he has nothing. Then you have his son, the fourth generation, whose grandfather was a Rasha. He didn't really get to meet his great-grandfather, who meets great-grandfather. These are the fourth generation down, you see. And he's so disconnected. Now, if that fourth son doesn't make himself into a Chacham himself and start the process again, his son is the fifth son. He's not even there. He's assimilated so far, he doesn't exist. Which, by the way, the whole Lubavitch Rebbe had a whole thing, so we have to leave the Pesach table, not literally, but go outside to pick up, because the fifth son's out there. He doesn't even know there's a question even to ask. Right? So we have to go and have to bring that fifth son and bring to the table. That's the whole Jewish outreach movement. Russia is considered, by the way, in our generation, they say. They were like four generations without anything, and by the fifth, sixth, seventh, they had to go and had to get them in. They were so disconnected, Russian Jewry, that we had to literally go out and bring them back to the quote-unquote Pesach table. They were the fifth son. They weren't even there. Didn't even know there was a question to even ask. Yes?
What's that, Tom? He's just oblivious, so he asks.
He's just there. He's just like completely, he's like, what's this? He sees it. He recognizes it. But he doesn't know what it is.
So he just asks an unmeaningful.
Right. In other words, if you write, he's asking like, he's inquisitive. But he just doesn't know. He's like, what is this stuff? He's still involved. He still wants to know. He's a open person. But they're all asking questions.
That's because he's not like learning. So.
Right, he's not learning, exactly.
So he's not necessarily like his fault. So like, he like wants to know.
We're not absolutely not blaming him. Absolutely. No, we're not blaming him.
Okay.
We can blame the rest of us for not educating him. Mm-hmm. The obligation doesn't lie with him. The obligation lies with the rest of the Jewish world for not actively... helping him understand the reasons behind being Jewish. But it always comes in Q&A form. You're not asking questions, he says, you're not learning. And that's a Baishan. So the Baishan over here is not just the person who is modest. Modest is a great thing. It's a person who is too embarrassed even to ask. So that's the student. How about this? That's a bad trait for a student. What's a bad trait for a teacher? What's a bad trait for a teacher? Okay, not encouraging students to ask questions. Excellent. Not encouraging students to ask questions. What is that trait called?
Assuming that they know.
Well, they don't know.
Be really confident in your material that like you don't even want them to like ask extra questions.
So the way, it could be, the way the Mishnah understands it is, v'lo ha cup. Well, this is Hillel. Velo hakapdan melamed, says Hillel. What's a kapdan? I am a makpid. So generally the word in Hebrew is the person's very, very particular. He's very makpid on something. Let's have a look at the Bar Tanura. He says, Harav she makpid ala tamidim. The rabbi, the teacher, who is makpid on their students, kisholimoto, when they ask him questions, lo yelamed karo, he's not going to teach them. They will not learn fit in the right way. Ela tzarech sheyasbir panim b'halacha l'talmidav. You have to teach your students clearly. So a kaptan is a person who's not willing to sit and talk and has a short temper. He gets angry and he doesn't open up the class. About this, not just teachers. This is going to be anyone who teaches others. Parents teach their kids all the time. If they're always makpid, oh, what are you asking? Never ask, never allow them to get into conversations. They get angry, they get irritated. It's interesting, I learned this Gemara recently, actually, for a few times, but recently, of one of the greatest sages, and I obviously can't remember his name. I think we looked at it in this class, Did we discuss it? Who used to teach his students 400 times? Was that in this class we discussed it? Which class was that in? There was one of the rabbis in the Gemara. He would sit with the students and he would learn the same piece of information 400 times if need be. And because of him, the Gemara goes to the great thing. Wow, his whole generation was forgiven for all his sins. He would sit with the student and the student just couldn't get it. Once, twice, 10, 50 times. How many times do you get the same point? 400 times he wanted to sit with his kid to teach them till it went into his skull. And because of that, he had a long life. His generation had a long life. Their sins were forgiven. The Gemara goes into great detail about the amazingness of this person. A person should have rochav lev, a wide heart. They should have patience, savlanut, umeishiv l'chol adam, and should answer every person l'chol adam b'chol davar sheshalo. Whatever your student's asking, you try to answer. Whatever your student asks, you try to give an answer. And by the way, I don't know is an answer, by the way. In case you're wondering. You do realize that. That is an answer. Go away is not an answer. That's a great question. I don't know the answer. But let's go and find out what the answer is an answer. You don't need to have an answer for everything. Okay? And he says, keep going back. Yachzira, this is Rabbeinu Yonah, Alem ad sheyodu la'amko shel davar. So they get to the depth of that inyan. Yeah? See if anyone has anything to say about this. Yeah, they seem to be saying, a person who is katsar lev, a koes, people get angry when someone asks a question. Oh, what are you asking questions for? You know? I hear many people tell me one reason they don't get involved in Judaism is they used to ask their rabbis questions, and the rabbis would never give them real answers.
I feel like that's a lot in the world. No?
I think it's in every world, unfortunately.
I think in like high schools mainly, where like some kids would like have like really like philosophical
questions. They wouldn't sit down, discuss it with them. Maybe they weren't able to, you know. But it's more a media thing. It's not they don't know the answer. It's not saying you're going to be a great teacher, know everything. It doesn't say that. It says, don't be makpid on your students. Don't be on their case. Don't get angry with them whenever they ask questions, you know.
My sister's in a very small all-girls like school, and she came from public school, and I guess she knows a lot more about like outside the community than the rest of the girls. So when they're teaching her things about Torah, she asks questions, and because they contradict themselves or they say something that's not true, and they took her out of the class and made her switch classes and like meet with her principal to speak about whatever questions she had because they didn't want her to ask in front of the other girls.
Look.
I know, they yelled at her for asking questions.
Oh, yeah.
questions about Torah, questions
like
general.
Yeah, they'll say something like, oh, and they'll be like, oh, like, goyim are horrible people or something, and she'll be like, no, they're not, like, why do you see that? Or something, she'll ask, like, a question, like, she'll be like, that's not true, like, why, where do you see that, why is that true? And they yelled at her, and they took her out of the class.
It's a problem. It's a big problem.
So
if people make statements they can't stand by and not able to explain, that's problematic.
And she started to like question everything about Judaism, you know?
Yeah. I hear. I'm telling you, it's a problem. Look, when you deal with young kids, they don't really ask questions, you know, you've got to feed them information. You know, at some point, when your kids are young, they're like, but what if, I'm like, you know what, just do it. You know what I'm saying? At some point, you've just got to get the job done.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. It has to be age appropriate. Every child has to be taught according to their level. But people who are older, who are hitting high school, and today's generation where they see everything and nothing is barred from them, and everything is open, and everything is discussed, you can't be like that. But it's not even so much. It's just the way you answer. I mean, that's what the Mishnah is saying. That's why I always wonder about this Mishnah. It doesn't say you have to know the answer to everything. It just says, just be respectful of the questioner. You can disagree. You can say, I think that's absolutely wrong. The teacher's allowed to say that. The teacher's allowed to say, I hear what you're saying, but that is complete nonsense. That's fine. It's just going to be respectful of the questioner. Doesn't have to agree what they're saying. But there has to be a certain to and fro. And the point is, because if you do that, they will shut up. They will not ask questions. If you don't ask questions, they're not going to learn. V'la b'ayshan lamed. So we're seeing over here, one of the jobs of a teacher is to bring out information from the student. You know? Look, some people are very embarrassed to ask questions. You know, they're very, very quiet people. You know? And many students, I mean, I give many make shame, you know? Many times I give a class sometimes, and someone comes up to me and goes, I have a question for you. They'll whisper to me. Yes. You said something, and they ask a question. I'm like, I wish you would have told that question loudly. Because it happens many, many times, by the way. I'm like, that question you just asked me is such a great question. It could have taken the whole conversation in class a whole different direction. Or it actually would have reminded me of something. I'll go, oh, I wanted to mention something. I forgot, but your question. I'm like, you should have asked that question in class. I'm too shy. But it actually would have opened up a conversation, which would have, first of all, it would have reminded me of something I wanted to say I forgot, which happens a lot. And then I could have like taken the conversation and steered into another direction. So questioning is not just for your answer. It opens up a whole channel of information that possibly wouldn't have been tapped into. Okay, let's finish off the Mishnah. V'loi chol hamar bebeschora machkim. What is that? V'loi chol hamar bebeschora machkim. And not everyone who is marbe, what is marbe? Harbe, a lot. A lot of what? Schora. What's schora? Business. People who are involved in business. Hamarba. A lot. As in, they're like at it all the time. We're not talking 9 to 5. Well, nowadays, it's not 9 to 5, it's 9 to 8. Right? They're doing 9 to 12. Such people, says Hillel, it's going to be difficult for them to become machkim. What's machkim? Smart. Wise. Wise. They can learn a lot by interacting with people. But this is from Chachma. Yes?
Is it better to be like louder and like less modest and having like questions and stuff rather than being like more modest and reserved and like not being the one.
Hillel's very clear. Hillel's saying that a person should challenge. Listen, you have to. The trait of Bushai saying is a good thing. People should be modest in dress, in action, in speech. That's good for everyone. But it's like, but not in a classroom. Because that's not the place for it. That's what he's saying. Right? You should ask. You should push. It should be done respectfully, not the way of the Rasha, right? But the way of the Chacham. And now he's saying that people, yoter midai, he says people involved with schora, says Rashi, yoter midai too much, right? Machim Torah, don't become smart in Torah. He was okay with business, Rashi. Rashi himself had a business. I wonder what he did for a living.
He made wine.
That's right.
He made what?
Wine. Oh. Actually, here now, Rashi's wine. You have it on my table. He made that wine. No, he didn't. No, I'm joking. Right. He was a vintner. He was a winemaker. And by the way, he wrote so much Torah that it boggles the mind when you study Torah and look at his commentary on Torah, and then you study Gemara, and you see his commentary on Gemara, and then you study all the prophets, and you see the... I don't know when he did anything. Just a vast amount. It's not possible one person in their lifetime could write so much on everything, and each thing he writes is well thought out. It can't contradict. If it does, it has to be answered. Unbelievable. He was able to. It must be that he do it was involved in business, because he had to support himself. However, his business was not the major part of his life. It was there to support his Torah learning, research, and writing. It had to be, because it is not possible. It is not possible. Okay? So he's not against business. He's against the Yotei Midai. You know? I have friends who are lawyers, by the way. They're the slaves of our generation. Right? I have people I know who like do 36-hour days. I was like, there's only 24 hours in a day. I don't get that. She goes, yeah, I was at my desk for 36 hours. Right? It's really tough. No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't think so. They'd sleep under their desk for like little naps. Okay. So such people, they are going to lack chachma.
Yeah.
Well, the word chachma actually means wisdom in general. It means wisdom in general. But he's referring, look, Rush seems to say he's referring to to Torah. That seems to be Rashi. Okay. And then he says, here's the big finish. Ovimkom she'ein anashim, and in the place where there are no anashim, hishtadel, try very hard, liyot ish, to be an ish. What's that? What is that? In a place where there are no anashim, hishtadel liyot ish. We know something. I just saw something very interesting. So just on the last thing we were saying, he says people who get involved in business usually have to travel far, right? That's how it used to be a lot more. Even today, you have to travel all the time. And the problem is, if you're traveling all the time, it's saying you don't have time to learn. Okay, you don't have time. You're always busy. You're running around. You're tired. You're doing business. You're buying. You're selling. You know, people involved in Marba do this all the time. So Rashi quotes a pasuk from the Torah. I think one of my favorite pesukim, actually. It's in Devarim, Lamed Yud Bet, and that is Lo B'Shamayim Hi. The Torah is not in the heavens, and it's not Me'er Hayam. And over there, Moshe Rabbeinu is speaking to the Jewish people, and the Jewish people are about to enter into Israel. And he says, HaMitzvah Zos, this mitzvah, which I'm going to tell you now, he says, it's not in the heavens, Lo B'Shamayim Hi, that a person could say, how can I go up to the heavens to get it? It's not on the other side of the oceans, right? You see, the Torah is in your heart and your mouth in order to do it. Lasos. In other words, people go traveling far and wide for a lot of things. However, over here in this context, he's saying it's close to you. Wisdom, you don't have to travel far to get wisdom. You can get it from where you are. Yeah.
Somebody's business. That's the only way they can support themselves and their family. That's what they know how to do.
Then that's what they're going to have to do. But people should be selective of what they do. I mean, I get asked a lot, most people who go to law school should not be going to law school. Many of these people who think they want to become lawyers because, well, what else am I going to do? I don't know why. They have this idea. Right? I just use law as an example because I know people who work in law work really, especially with big firms. They don't know what they're actually getting themselves into. I tell students, if you want to work in law and you want to get a law degree, go and work. They think they're going to be in court. They'll think of some kind of movie defending the rights of all these people. And no, that is not what they do. They read the fine print. You know that fine print you get, those little contracts, you see that? And when they work for a big firm, for the first 1, 2, 3 years, they're doing lots and lots of photocopying. Right? They see themselves like, you know, in the courtroom, and they're defending the homeless and the poor people. And, I mean, there are some people who do that, you know. There's also some actors who end up in Hollywood, in big motion pictures. But 70% are out of work at any given time. So what a person does for a living should be well thought about. I mean, really, all panas comes from Hashem. But if a person, however, is found a profession, that's where they support the family, that's what they have to do. That's what they have to do. So what is this Ein Anashim? If there are no Anashim. So Anashim is a good term. Good people. To get involved in helping others. And a place where there are no Anashim, you should try to become an Ish. This is quoted a lot. You should take control. That's what Rashi seems to say. Hishtadel, v'ta'asog b'tzarchi tzibur, get involved in the needs of the community. Aval, however, you can get back to your learning and your spiritual pursuits. Which reminds me of a very interesting story. We just finished Purim. Who is the hero of Purim? A hero. Mordechai. Mordechai was an extremely learned individual who knew a vast amount, was on the Sanhedrin, knew 70 languages, which is how he understood what I was going to say, but she sits in the exam right now, so I can't say the name. He knew a vast amount of information. And something unusual happened. He had to save the Jewish people. So he left his books, and he left his position, and no one else was going to do it. No one else was going to provoke and to defeat Haman. So he had to do it himself. Interestingly, there is a medrash that says, at the end, when he saved the Jewish people, he did what he had to do to save them. His Torah learning had been affected. There were people who had learned Torah and had been involved, and they'd learned more over because it took a long time for him to get his job done. He was involved in this night and day trying to save the Jewish people. He did what he had to do, and he saved the entire Jewish people. You know what I'm saying? He and his and Esther, they were catalysts. They were for this incredible saving. However, he was affected. It did affect him. And they say that his caliber among the rabbis was actually decreased a little bit afterwards. He's still affected by it. But he still did what he had to do. So even though you may get affected by it, financially, spiritually, or whatever, the job has to get done.
You're saying, even if you become spiritually...
My point is, sometimes... People, yeah. Sometimes, that's exactly what I'm saying. Sometimes, even though you know the consequences of this, could be that your standing, your finances, your could be reduced, you still have to do it. If there's no one else to do it. He knew full well that he was going to be affected by it. And for him, Mordechai, that meant his reduction in his standing among Torah scholars and his amount of Torah knowledge. Because over the Purim story happened over, you know, 15, 17 years, you know. But that's what he had to do. No one else was going to do it. So he took on the role and the job of doing it. He literally volunteered himself. No one told him to do it. Did they? He was a great leader, so he figured it out himself. Doesn't speak about anyone saying, yeah. Now, Esther was told by Mordechai. You remember? Mordechai told Esther to go in and get the job done. But he was the one who... Okay, what's the connector over here? That's difficult. What do you think? Is there one thread that links this mishnah together, all these ideas? So the last one you want to say is don't be overconfident. This one is saying be more confident. Don't make yourself into a shmata. Interesting, very good. I like that. Yeah?
Isn't it like sometimes you have to do something even though your standard might be lowered? Like you shouldn't be shy to ask a question just because you think other people think lower of you. Just like you shouldn't let something bad happen to the Jewish people.
Right, so we start. It kind of follows a pattern. It starts with the boor, right? Who's the lowest? Then you get to Am Haaretz, and then we talk about fine. These people are going to be lacking in wisdom, spirituality, whatever it is. Then we're going to talk about the questioner. Then we're going to talk about the. Then we're going to talk about the teacher of those people, and then we say finally. And when there's no Anashim, you got to take the top position. Be an ish. As I say in English, be a man. Man up. Thank you, I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Take care. Okay, I'll give you that. Anything else? Any questions?
Now
that's right, you don't have to ask that question.
I don't know, what is it? What's the connector?
I like that one. Be confident in yourself and your learning. I'll give you that. That could be.
But do you not know the answer?
No, I don't. I have no idea.
Okay.
That's what I'm asking you. I'm not asking because I know the answer. I know. If I knew the answer, I wouldn't have to ask you, would I? I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe sometimes
you just ask, even though they know the answer, so that the students... They think they know answers. They got no idea. They got no idea. No, I got no idea. I would like it, though. I can still learn new things, you know. I'm not that bright. Okay, let's see the we'll do one more Mishnah. Let's see the next Mishnah. This is a difficult Mishnah. This is a really difficult Mishnah. It just kind of always seemed out of place to me, but it isn't. Afoya ra gulgolet achat shesafal pnei hamayim. He saw a skull that was floating on the water. Okay? He's walking along one day. And he's passing, I don't know what is it, a river, a lake, I don't know. And he sees there's a skull that's floating on the water. A skull, a... You don't see that too often. You don't see that too often?
What?
You don't see that too often? Like on a, no. Well, it used to be that dead bodies used to be lying around. And he sees a skull on the water, and he has a moment, I guess. It affects him. And he says, Amar. I have different gears over here. Amallah. He spoke to the skull and said, Al da ateft atfuch. He says, Rasha, this is Batno, Rashayita, you were a bad person. Umalastemava Briot, and used to do bad things to people. Umutsifan Benar, and that's why you ended up in this river. What? So since you did bad things, atfuch, you ended up mida keneged mida, being drowned yourself. You were bad to other people, you hurt and you stole and you drowned other people, in the end, you got drowned. Vesof, and in the end, metafayich yutufun. But those that got you they will end up getting it as well. Those who drowned you, they're going to end up in the same situation that you are. What is going on with this Mishnah?
Don't stoop down to someone else's level.
Don't stoop down to someone else's level.
Revenge,
okay. Revenge seems to be part of it. The Batanor agrees with you. They're saying, don't take revenge. It wasn't your job to kill this bad person. Ella levet din, take it to Beit Din. V'akadosh Baruch Hu, and God, misarcha biyadan shemegalgalin chov al dechov chayav. There is an idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu ends up making everything work out, and justice is always going to end up happening. This is based upon an idea which goes like this. This is from the Gemara in Makot, a very famous case. A person kills somebody on purpose. And another, and is not found guilty. Another person kills someone by accident, and has to go to a city of refuge, which is the by accident, but through negligence, I should say. Ends up not being found guilty and not going. The Gemara says Hashem will end, will have it, so that one person will end up climbing a ladder. The guy will be underneath it. The guy will fall off a ladder. Squish the guy, should have died. And that person now killed someone through negligence, but accidentally, and end up getting what he gets. That is the example given by the Gemara to show what idea? That every, whether you see it or not, but, and it may take generations, by the way, that's another discussion, but all imbalance ends up getting ordered.
You don't have to do it. That's the point. That you shouldn't take it upon yourself to try it.
Right. Hashem will order it. You know, as people say, it's not fair, and parents say, life isn't fair. I don't like that. You know, people say that to you? It's not fair. Because, well, life isn't fair. It is. People will get their just deserts, maybe in this life, maybe in the next life,
yeah.
But that's also considered life. That's also considered life. We're considering that to be life as well. But they will get their just deserts. They may have to come back a few times as well, but everything gets redressed. Hashem runs the entire world. Every action, everything we do, as I said, it takes time. It may not be immediate, but But everything gets redressed and rebalanced. I think that could be what he's saying. I'm going to assume Hillel knew who this skull belonged to, because the commentator seemed to say that he knew this person was not a good person at all. But I think taking things into your own hands is not seen as a good thing. All right, stop over there. Have a Shabbat Shalom. We'll pick up Monday morning. We'll begin a new topic of Lashon Hara. And we will also start learning the Shemona Esrei together. The one time in your life you do that. Have a great Shabbat.